And good morning. And thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show. And it's the Wednesday edition on this beautiful Wednesday, November 2nd. And I'm Susie Prez, one of the co-hosts. And
I'm Chris Bessler, your co-host here today. Susie, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. It's great to be here. We have a really exciting and informative show planned.
We do. We're going to be talking with the candidates for the Idaho Senate. That's the incumbent Sean Keogh and her Democratic challenger, Steve Tanner. And we're going to get to them in just a minute. They're here. They're dying to answer a bunch of questions. I know it.
But first,
it was kind of looking like it might be a nice morning out
there. I have great news for everyone. It still says for today, mostly cloudy from the National Weather Service. Currently, it's 45 degrees. There'll be patchy fog tonight. High today, 50, and low tonight, 39. But the next 4 days at least, it's mostly sunny, mostly sunny, mostly sunny. Highs 51, and lows are in the 30s, mid-30s. So, yay, sunshine.
Yeah, we can use some mostly sunny, can't we?
We can dry out and all the dry out.
And it's not a figment of your imagination. It was really rainy. In fact, the month of October was not just the wettest October on record, but according to the Spokane Weather Station, it was the wettest month ever. That we had 6.5 inches of rain. That's actually measured in Spokane. We were something similar. I don't have the number for us here, but that set some records. And we can testify. It was mighty wet.
Yeah, and it was dry in places where it should have been wet, like Seattle. They didn't get that much rain.
Yeah.
They had more sunshine. So I wonder if things are shifting, at least right now, a little bit.
Very briefly, a couple of things going on around town. Tonight is the candidates forum. It's at the Sandpoint High School Auditorium. It's running from 5:30 p.m. until 7:30 p.m. Our two candidates with us today will be there, as well as candidates for all the races. We've invited the candidates for even the uncontested races to come and give a short statement so that voters can meet the folks that will be representing them. And the candidates that are in contested races will stay on the stage and take questions from the audience. So it's a chance for people to come meet the candidates, ask them questions, and size them up. So hopefully people will do that. Again, that's 5:30 to 7:30 at the Sandpoint High School Auditorium.
It's a great opportunity to get further informed about your election choices. And, of course, we want to encourage people to go out and vote next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, yes. We're almost here. Should mention that that's going to be broadcast live right here on 88.5 KRFY, so you can tune in at 5:30 and hear it. It's also going to be streaming live on sandpointonline.com, and people can connect starting at 5:25 there to see the candidates and hear them speak, as well as there's going to be a chat feature. So if you were watching it from home, you could actually submit a question online.
That's what I wondered. So how do you do that? Where do you go?
You go just to sandpointonline.com, and you'll see a big big feature on the front page.
You can type in your question.
Yes.
All right.
They'll type in questions. And comments. You know, mm-hmm. We found the last time we did this for the primary that there's a lot of commentary going back and forth from people watching, cheering and jeering.
I bet. And it's a real fun time to be part of the community. A lot of people show up in person for the forum. So we encourage everyone to go on down.
Yep.
High school, 5:30 tonight.
Yep. And with that, let's get into today's show. Again, we are interviewing the candidates for Legislative District 1 Senate. That's Sean Keogh, the Republican incumbent, and Steve Tanner, the Democrat. Sean and Steve, just say hello so people can hear your voice.
Hi.
Steve.
Good morning.
Let's just jump right into it. We'll start with you, Steve. You each get a minute or 2 minutes just to give us an opening statement and throw in some information about your background, your experience, and qualifications as well. Why you're out telling people why they should vote for you.
Well, I don't know if they should vote for me for how long I've been here. I've been here for a little over 50 years and have a wife and 8 children. And I graduated from Montessori High and the University of Idaho. And, I'm running because we were we were part of a country that was started with called the Great Experiment of Freedom. Can men govern themselves? And it's in a wonderful experiment. And I'm concerned that that experiment is soon to be over. We're heading in a direction instead of in a republic where a system of our system of government and action is based upon law, to now it's becoming based upon political correctness. And last year's Supreme Court ruling, it based its opinion on political correctness, not upon the original intent of the Constitution. And that decision, the gay marriage decision, was another watershed issue in our nation's clear descent away from truth and right. The state has become the mother that seeks to provide cradle-to-grave guidance and protection, while freedom and responsibility seem to be outdated and even outlawed. I believe and support the intent of the original intent of the Constitution, pro-life, Second Amendment, hard monetary system, traditional marriage, and justice. And you know, I'm even going to quote Abraham Lincoln. He said, as a nation of free men, we'll either live forever or die by suicide. And I believe that we're on that suicidal course, and it's time to alter it. And I'm going to also quote Samuel Adams, and then I'll be done here for the beginning, but Samuel Adams was known as the father of the American Revolution, and he said, if ever a time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of its experienced patriots to prevent its ruin. And I think that time has come, and we need to prevent its ruin, and people need to wake up. And the other question I ask is, how bad or at what point will you say you've had enough? And I've got to that point, so that's why I'm running. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a couple of follow-up questions. Have you held other public offices previously?
No, I haven't, no.
Are there any service or professional organizations you belong to that you think might bear on your qualifications?
Well, I am involved in different organizations, and I guess I would rather not bring that up right now.
So okay. That's all. And I'm going to ask one question because it's come up multiple times. Bonner County Democrats sent around an email to their members to say that you're an ultra-conservative Tea Party type, quote, that's their words, and that you're not endorsed by either the Boundary County Democrats or the Bonner County Democrats. So a chance to address that, please.
Right. And I'm glad I'm not endorsed by them, because anybody can sign up in the Democratic Party. Anybody can sign up in the Republican Party. If you go back far enough in history, the Democratic Party was a totally different party. Thomas Jefferson was a man who understand the limits of government, and they claim him as the beginning of the Democratic Party. And Andrew Jackson was one who perhaps flawed in character, but he understood the battle between the international bankers, and he stood against them for a hard monetary system, which is very important for our economy. So those are basics that I can call upon. There's other issues that the early Democratic Party, they opposed public education because they felt that the families would lose their responsibility or their duty to teach their children. So those are really interesting points we don't see today, but that's what I call upon. I also call upon the present Democratic Party that just quote her, this is a couple of years old, but this is a quote from at the time the president of the Bonner County Democrats. She said, if ever I'm going to be a real candidate, one person I'm not going to run against is Sean Keogh. I've known her too long and she grew up with me. I paraphrase the last part, but that's most Democrats I meet are actually happy with our representatives in the legislature. They do a really good job of representing the legislative district, and two of those people have been replaced. So that's the Democrat view, and I don't have that view of the modern Democrats.
Okay, thanks. Well, now we go to you, Sean. You have a chance to address that last part, but let's start out with your opening statement. A couple minutes to tell us about your experience and qualifications.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Susie. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and visit with you and your listening audience. And I am the incumbent, and I am running for re-election, and I am the Republican nominee. And I am running because I continue to believe that I can help make a difference in our state government, a positive difference for our communities here at home. And I am co-chair of the Budget Committee and senior member of the Transportation Committee. And in those two roles, I have the ability to influence policy, transportation policy, and funding for things like our roads and our schools. which constituents have told me are important. My background in I'm old enough now. I can say I've lived here most of my life, but I moved here right out of high school in 1979. And my husband and I have raised our family here, and our boys are now graduated from college, and we have two grandchildren. My background that I bring to this position, in addition to the service experience that I have, is years of business management in businesses around Sandpoint, and also worked for 12 years at the Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. And currently, I work with the Associated Logging Contractors, which is an organization that provides workers' comp insurance and other insurance, as well as safety consulting to keep our loggers and our truckers, help them get home every day safely. Again, my desire to serve, and it would be my honor to continue to serve, is to continue to do things for our communities. I've been able to help increase our homeowners exemption. I support our Second Amendment. I'm anti-abortion. I cut our personal property tax. And I feel like I bring responsible representation. And that's what I have to offer the voters.
Well, thank you, Sean. We want to just go back to, I guess we'll start with Sean, since you're talking. We're kind of going to go back and forth. Can you identify maybe 3 to 4 of the most important issues that you believe are important for our District 1 and or the state as in a general, and your position on these issues?
Well, thank you, Susie. As I've visited with voters and continue to communicate with folks here at home, there's a couple of issues that are top on people's minds that I'm hearing about. The ability to find a good-paying job continues to be an issue. Regulatory burdens that businesses face in order to do business here in Northern Idaho and continue to stay here and grow, and also funding for our public schools and road projects. And there are other issues, but those seem to continue to rise to the top. In terms of business help, government doesn't provide jobs, but government certainly can make a business climate more friendly. And I've done a couple of things to try to encourage businesses to be able to grow here. We have put in place a tax reinvestment program that is for existing businesses or new businesses that if they provide jobs and they provide it at a wage that's above the local average and provide benefits, they can get a rebate on some of the taxes that they've paid, as one example. And I've helped also to extend water lines and sewer lines as well to businesses, and then to cut some of the red tape that businesses have to deal with in their permitting processes. And schools and school funding, as both Bonner and Boundary County school districts struggle to make ends meet and increasingly have to ask the property taxpayers for more money each year. It is continually clear that the state needs to step up to its constitutional duty of providing funding for schools.
We'll get into some of those questions deeper as we go along. And Steve Tanner, we'd like to ask you, what do you identify as some of the more important top issues? And what are your positions on these issues? You don't have to go into it too much because we'll probably touch on it in a deeper question.
Well, I think the schools are a huge issue. You know, the effort to raise children, the youth, and what are we inculcating into their hearts and their minds. And it's a huge issue. It was a huge issue in early America. And it's very, very important. You know, it's not only, it's not so much an issue of how much you're spending or what are you teaching. And another issue, obviously, is the economy, and it is a huge issue. And we can look at that issue and say, well, why are we headed in this direction and what's happening? And, you know, just a quick overview of that is you know, we are affected hugely by the national debt, and it increases by $1 million about every 80 seconds. So we are virtually bankrupt as a nation. It's, I think it's close to $20 trillion debt. I don't know how much that is. That's a lot of money. But, you know, that has an effect on all of us. And why is that happening? We need to look at those foundations and reestablish those upon our nation's foundation, you know. So those are two big issues. There's a lot of other issues. It's like regulation and how much regulation do we have. Obviously, we want less regulation, but we still want justice. And that's a proper role of government. The ownership of federal lands, you know, can they own 60% of Idaho? Well, they do, or at least they claim it. I believe that obviously that's a question we should look at seriously and determine whether we should, I think we should deal with that. So, you know, if I got a second, two more, I want to say something about Shawn Keough. And we've known her for years and years, and I'm not here to make a personal attack about her. So I just want you to know that she has represented us and me in a lot of ways, and I appreciate it very much. And I think that, you know, anybody in an office of a public office, there's a lot of work. I used to think people sat down in a chair and smoked cigars in some back room. And I've been down there only a few times, but these people work very hard and they're paid very little money. So I think that's due a good amount of respect for them. So I'd like to say thank you for that.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Well, we're going to return to that question of economy and job creation, since it's a big one, it seems like. And you both said it's important for the legislature to deal with it. But, and Sean, you actually rattled off part of an answer to this. What are the specific actions that the state legislature can do to help improve the economy and create jobs? And not just create jobs, but create good-paying jobs, because that's a very big issue as well.
Well, to expand a little bit on that question, and it is one that keeps coming up, and we have our unemployment rate is almost twice as high in this legislative district as is the unemployment rate in other parts of the state. So the tax reinvestment program is one tool that the state government can provide, and again, it's available to businesses that grow jobs or bring jobs here. And there's a variety of criteria that they have to meet in order to be able to get a rebate on sales taxes and other taxes that they have paid. And I think they can get up to 30% of that back, if I'm remembering correctly. And the wage level requirement is to be above the average wage and to also be able to provide benefits. And it's those type of tools that state government can provide that will help businesses. That particular tool has already helped businesses like Cochava, for example, in Sandpoint. Also, extension of infrastructure. And in today's world, infrastructure means fiber, internet access, high-speed internet access. And the state has a role, in my view, in assisting that utility really gets rolled out right alongside of our power and water, increased transportation access, and good, safe transportation systems are another thing that help business. And also, what I deal with from time to time are permitting issues or regulations that prevent a business from expanding or somehow curtail operations. There's a company up in Boundary County that I've worked with and had to be a liaison between them and the Department of Environmental Quality when the testing standards that they used for air pollution measurement were not consistent, and they didn't have a clear written directions on what the standards were and how to measure for them. And those things kept changing. And I think we all agree on the overall goal of having clean air and watching what it is that we're putting into it. But the original work of our State Department of Environmental Quality was such that business could have gone out of business, and it would have cost at least 30 jobs and have been a huge impact on Boundary County's economy. So those type of things are where I see a state legislature able to help.
Okay. Related follow-up question here. Many states are increasing the minimum wage, some to as much as $15 an hour. Idaho's minimum is the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Should Idaho increase its minimum wage?
I'm not a proponent of a mandated minimum wage, and maybe I am naive, but it seems like, particularly here in our area, when you look at, you see the help wanted signs on McDonald's, for example, and they're advertising starting wages at $10 an hour. And I've seen similar signs in other places. And so I am not a proponent of slave labor, but I am a proponent of the free market. And it seems like, especially in a tight employment situation, employers are going to put out the wages that they can afford to attract and keep good employees.
Okay. Steve Tanner, the same question on economy and job creation to you. You've identified it as an important issue, but what specific actions would you advocate or support the state legislature to take to help improve the economy and jobs?
Well, most people don't understand, but right before the Constitution was adopted, the Articles of Confederation were in effect, and the colonies were about ready to go bankrupt. There was an incredible bad economy. There were bankruptcies. There was a lot of disarray. There was a lot of problems. And there's letters from Washington. I don't have them in front of me, but talking about how bad it was. And they expected the British were waiting for the colonies to collapse so they could take over again. And it's very interesting, when they wrote the Constitution, the four men that wrote the Declaration of Independence and the single man that authored this part that I'm going to talk about in the Constitution was Roger Sherman. And he wrote a book, a treatise on the evils of paper money, and he based it upon unjust weights and measures. And he said what happened to him, and he had it happen to him personally, is that he had his money inflated until it was worthless. And that's what was happening in the colonies. And so when they wrote the Declaration, they sought to outlaw paper money. And they one of the things they excluded in Article 1, Section 10 was, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin as a tender in debt for payment. And that's what they sought to do. And the states aren't doing that. The states are using Federal Reserve notes, and they're outlawed from doing that. So by going back to the principles our nation was founded upon and looking at the Constitution and saying, okay, how do we do this? That's a huge issue, because we're entering into the same thing. We have an international banking cartel controlling our currency, and it's incredible what it's doing to destroy every part of society. I'm going to read a quote from George Washington, and this is 1787. He said, "But in the pursuit of the means, we should unfortunately stumble again on unfunded paper money or any similar species of fraud. We shall assuredly give a fatal stab to our national credit in its infancy. Paper money will invariably operate in the body of politics as spirit liquors on the human body. They prey on the vitals and ultimately destroy them. Paper money has had the effect in your state that it will ever have, to ruin commerce, oppress the honest, and open the door to every species of fraud and injustice." You know, it's incredible. If we don't have a sound and a just monetary system, it corrupts all of society. And so it is, we need to return to that. And it's already been done. We just have to follow the Constitution.
I have to ask a follow-up question on this. How can the state legislature affect that issue?
Well, the state legislature, the whole economy of the state is based upon the dollar. The dollar bill has a specific weight and measure. And if it's not going to do that, it has to do that. When the state is commanded to go by that, then they have to do it. And they're the ones that have to go about accomplishing that. They can't just go down the road like, oh, it doesn't matter. And at some point, this economy will collapse. How many trillion-dollar debt will be enough, okay? It's happened in every nation in the world. History has proven it. We can't print this garbage. or the have someone else to print it in this case and expect to survive. So it's an issue we have to address. The economy and all that will take care of itself in a free market society. Let the government get out of it. Like she mentioned about, we're talking about certain wage rates. That has no business in government. Government has no proper role in affecting that. Their job is to do justice and to have and promote that. And
okay, so that takes care of my other follow-up question, which is where you stand on the minimum wage. Okay.
I want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And our guests in the studio today for Local Decision 2016 are incumbent Senator in District 1, Sean Keough, and her running mate.
Her opponent, actually.
Her opponent. Yeah, what am I saying? Her opponent, Steve Tanner, running in the Democrat.
You don't get a vice senator, I'm sorry.
So anyways, thank you for joining us, and we'll continue on. I have a question. In the North Idaho region, and this one will start with Steve. In the North Idaho region, there is a concern about oil and coal trains contributing to health, environmental, and safety in our region. And with the global understanding that oil and coal is a contributing factor to global warming, how do you see Idaho and Idaho legislature being part of the solution? What can be done? Idaho has a clean energy plan that was developed in 2007, but has kind of fallen by the wayside, I would say, something like that. And what is your stand on this? How can we address this?
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't see that as a problem. I see coal movement as a good thing for our society, and I don't believe in the global warming myth. I believe that we have a basis of belief system that has totally been undermined. Our nation was founded in the fear of God. All through the Declaration, it talks about Creator and honoring our Creator. When we lose that philosophy and we start with a philosophy that man evolved, then we have a whole different worldview than we do that if we answer to God. In the worldview of our creators, we're to be good stewards of what God has blessed us with. And we have not doing that. I was in the logging business for years. We're letting the woods rot. We're destroying what he has given to us to be a blessing. And we're failing to do that. These are for our use. The earth will actually wear old, okay, like a garment. It will wax old like a garment. So we are to be good stewards. We aren't to meet the environmental movement. I believe most of the environmental movement, the hardcore environmental movements, is socialism and humanism, and those foundations of that produce death. They have in every communist country there is. Where there is no God, that's the basis of communism, whether it be China or Russia, and there's incredible if you want to call it, there's incredible environmental problems in those areas. So I know that the companies that are moving the oil are going to be very careful because they're trying to do it without causing catastrophe or huge amounts of cost.
Okay, I just want to do a follow-up with you, Steve. The coal companies, the train companies, say that there will be at least 10 oil or derailments of trains in this country with coal or oil each year. And in Quebec a few years ago, it was a tragedy where a train ran into a town and blew up. These are rolling bombs. This is what some people say and feel is true. And they're trying to remedy this through better cars, oil cars. So what do you say to that? Feel that the oil the train companies are adequately maintaining the tracks and providing coal and oil, especially the oil tankers that will not blow up if they derail?
I would say that they're probably making a reasonable effort to do it. I haven't studied that issue, but I do know that freedom has a risk. It's like the right to bear arms. That's a risk to all of us. But there's also, if somebody expresses a misuse of that, then they have to be curtailed. Freedom has that risk. People move things. There's people drive down the highway all the time, and we're at great risk. And so it's our duty to be responsible, and we need to be that individually and collectively. But as far as to stop that risk, because our motive is to stop the production in America, I'm opposed to that. I believe these people, the use of that oil is very important, and we should see it go to market. So,
okay, thank you. And Sean, the same question about the Idaho Clean Energy Plan. The concern about oil and coal trains contributing to health, environmental safety problems, especially in the North Idaho area where they're going along the river, polluting rivers if they derail, and the potential for safety.
Well, thank you for that question. It is an important issue for those of us that live in what the train fans call the funnel, mm-hmm. Where the major rail lines come together right here in our area. And there's been a couple of things that I've worked on this issue. First of all, recognizing that the movement of trains is a federal issue, and so at the State House, there's not a lot that we can do in that regard. However, I have been using my relationship with the train companies and Idaho's regulatory authority through the Public Utilities Commission to make sure that safety is paramount. It is paramount for the train companies, but there are things that we can do and that are being done to increase our vigilance and to decrease the risk of derailment. Burlington Northern, in particular, has been helping to fund emergency services training, emergency services equipment, equipment for containment of an oil spill should a derailment happen. And the train companies are trying to move towards the better built cars, train cars that will have less likelihood of leaking. And so those are some issues that are underway that a state legislator can be a part of, facilitating the communication, facilitating the message to the train companies that we expect safe operations through our area while our federal folks work through these issues. I'm also a proponent of finding alternative fuel sources, recognizing again that I work for the logging industry, and so maybe I have a vested interest or a conflict of interest. But at the same time, we do have and we do grow a renewable resource of trees, and we underutilize woody biomass, and we could put people to work by simply harvesting the dead and dying trees that are out there and building woody biomass plants. That is widespread throughout Europe, and it's a proven science, a proven source, and we grow it here very well. And so I'll continue to be part of efforts and both positions that I have on that. And then the clean energy plan that the state has, the leadership for renewing that plan in 2007 was provided by Representative George Eskridge, the chair in the House of the Energy Committee, and Senator Kurt McKenzie, who was the chair in the Senate. With neither of those gentlemen being in the legislature now, there's a rebuilding, so to speak, of the leadership on energy issues. Representative Jeff Thompson has sort of stepped into that role in Representative Eskridge's place. Jeff is from Idaho Falls. And the plan is to look at that energy plan and to review it and refresh it and renew it to going forward.
Well, that's good news. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, next question, next topic here. We've both touched on education as an important issue. The state's budget for education was cut back drastically after the recession took hold in 2009. As the economy has improved, the legislature has increased school funding. Last session, they approved a 7.4% budget increase, which was less actually than the 7.9% increase that Governor Otter proposed. Even with that, Idaho's per pupil spending on K through 12 schools is next to lowest in the country. So the question here is, do you favor or oppose increased funding for education? And if you do support increased funding, how is the state going to pay for it? And let's start with you, Sean.
Well, thank you. Well, a couple of things. I think it's important to recognize that because the legislature put away $300 million in so-called rainy day accounts the public schools budget was cushioned from the downturn in the economy for almost the entire time that we were in that downturn. It wasn't until that last year, unfortunately, that we had to make those cuts. And that was not at all something that I wanted to do or be a part of, but it was a reality. We have a balanced budget in the state. It certainly didn't make sense to raise taxes on people at a time when a huge number of Idahoans were unemployed. And so I just want the record to be clear in that regard. We promised that Governor Otter and myself and others promised that as our economy rebounded, education would be top on the list for investment. And we've kept that promise. And again, recognizing that the general fund budget is a balanced budget and that K-12 education takes almost 50 cents of every dollar. But that all being said, yes, we need to do better. And I believe that we are committed as a legislature, whether I'm there or not. I think there's a recognition and a commitment on the part of a majority of legislators to make sure that our K-12 system is accountable and has the funding that it needs to move our students into successful lives in this century. So we're trying, and there's a lot of efforts underway. And I guess the last thing I would say, and if I miss something, please let me know. But our state constitution requires that the legislature have a uniform system of public schools. And so very clearly, in my view, that means that the legislature is responsible for that system of schools financially and should be carrying that burden, particularly when we put mandates from the state level onto the local districts.
So let's follow up that idea a little bit. Do you feel like we have a uniform quality of education north to south in Idaho? Having been into some of the schools in Boise, it seems like their facilities at least are nicer and newer and possibly better funded.
You know, it's it's a challenge because there are other places in the state where the economy is doing better. So they are able to pass supplemental levies and building bonds and building levies that are funding those facilities and are funding extra beyond the minimum that the state is providing. And so, no, I would say no, it's not a uniform system. Where we are gaining in that regard is the use of the internet. And with the effort of the Idaho Education Network, as awful as that has turned out to be in terms of a financial mess and lawsuits in regards to how that what company delivered that technology, we now have, in spite of that challenge, which is ongoing, we now have every high school in the state hooked up to high-speed internet, and that's providing a lot more opportunity for that basic uniform education opportunity for kids, whether they live in Moyet Springs or they live in Boise, Idaho. They have that access now where they can get classes that they might not otherwise have been able to get, and that's been a benefit.
Okay. Thank you, Sean. Steve Tanner, the same question to you. Do you favor or oppose increased funding for education? If you support increased funding, how should the state come up with the money to do that?
You mentioned that Idaho paid the least per student. Do you have a figure for that, or you just?
I don't have it. I just have seen the rankings that were okay. That were next to last in per pupil expenditure.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know how much it is per student?
I could look it up real quick.
Okay.
Somewhere between 5,000 and 8,000 sticks in my mind.
Yeah, it's closer to 8, I guess. But anyway, while she looks that up, I'll head off on that. I education is what I call the sacred cow. I have been attacked for running the Democratic ticket, but I certainly don't hide what I believe. I'm not trying to be a Trojan horse. The public school system is a sacred cow, and that sacred cow, over in India, they worship these cows and they trample on their food, and they are a plight to them, and that's what's happening here in America. We're having this system of education that started with a whole different foundation, and it's becoming the guide for our future generations. And we're starting to reap the fruits of that. And God said, man, he won't be mocked. Whatsoever man sows, so shall he also reap. Well, so is it true with a nation and a people. And we're sowing into these children philosophies that are contrary to what's right and good. You know, one of the other Supreme Court rulings before that was in the 60s, they ruled that the Bible would be taken out of school, that prayer would be taken out of school. And then in the 70s, we had abortion, and now we have gay marriage. And so these issues are truly a progression of what we're teaching the young people, and the schools have been taken over by the humanistic philosophies. Evolution is a religion. It is a faith. They can't prove it, okay? And it is totally at odds with our nation's founding. They believed in absolutes. They believed that we were blessed by our Creator. Even our state constitution starts with grateful to Almighty God. And this is a serious thing. When we deny that and we teach these young people, if you give knowledge without inculcating into them the character to control that knowledge, you will have hell on earth, and that's where we're headed. And I'm sorry. This has to be changed. We have to alter this, or we'll have nothing left. And it's not soon, not far away. Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote, he was credited with bringing down the Soviet Union. He wrote Archipelago, Gulag Archipelago. And he said 60 to 65 million Christians were murdered in Russia. And he said, the reason is we forgot God. And we're doing that today. And we're having this huge monetary output up to half of our state budget to see that it happens. And it needs to be altered and changed. I don't really care if some court says 2 + 2 = 7 and they can call themselves the Supreme Court, that's a lie. And what they've put out lately is a lie. And we have to have the backbone to stand up. And I think that's why they have people that go into office pledge to uphold the Constitution. They have to learn what it says. They don't pledge to uphold the Constitution the way somebody else tells them it means. They have to learn what it means. And that we can learn what it means by studying it. We can learn from the Federalist Papers. There's plenty of information of what those men sought to do when they established that. And we got to go back and learn that. So anyway, I'm against public any more money. We should cut the budget for the public schools. We need to reinculcate the foundations of public education upon what's right and good and the absolutes that God has given us.
Okay. Thank you, Steve Tanner. I want to tell our listeners who have just tuned in that this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show with your host, Chris and Susie. And today we're speaking with the candidates for the District 1 Idaho Senate seat, Steve Tanner, the Democrat, and Sean Keogh, the incumbent Republican.
Yes, and we have more questions for you. I'd like to go to the Affordable Care Act, and it's now in place, and Idahoans signed up at one of the highest per capita rates in the country with about 50,000 enrollments. But one provision in the law permits states to expand Medicaid to cover an estimated 60 to 80,000 Idahoans who make too much to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to be eligible for subsidies on the state insurance exchange. Last legislative session, lawmakers adjourned without agreeing to a solution. What, if any, action do you favor to cover health care coverage gap? They're calling it the Medicaid gap. For lower-income Idahoans, and we'll start with you, Steve Tanner.
Yeah, I oppose the healthcare system. I oppose any increase in Medicare or Medicaid or any of that. I believe that that's outside the proper role of government. All it amounts to is government playing God and playing mother to the people. That's not government's responsibility. You know, and I think that we need to stop it. That's a good way to say it. You know, the famous line from Borah was, "I'm against it." Well, I'm against it. I'm going to read a quote. I like reading these quotes because I think that if I tell you, it really won't make much difference to you. I'm a nut, and what I'm talking about is worthless. But when these people talk, I think there's some substance there. And Thomas Jefferson said, "I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people upon the pretense of taking care of them." And that's what we're doing. there's pretenses everywhere, and that's what happens when you separate. You separate what somebody's getting from who's paying for it. You have to, people have to be responsible, and to hold people responsible, you have to let them be responsible. You can't take it over. It's like the public schools or healthcare. What's next? You know, we're going to pay for the graveyards, and we're going to pay for the everything. And there's no end to socialism. Socialism doesn't work. It never has worked. It always ends in poverty and slavery and death. We have to start waking up to this. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. And Sean, same question.
Thank you. Obamacare is and remains the law of the land at this point in time.
I disagree.
I respect that. I understand that. As a state legislator, we have a responsibility around that. Today, those costs of those people that are in the so-called Medicaid gap are being picked up by the rest of us through our insurance policy premiums. They're also being picked up by the hospitals through emergency room services that are not paid for. And they're being paid on our county property taxes by our county's indigent fund as well. And the Medicaid expansion would save counties and thereby county property owners almost $56 million if that was expanded. These are folks that are in this gap are folks that are generally what's called the working poor. They're working hard. They're trying to make ends meet, and they simply can't afford insurance. And Obamacare, I think, didn't address the issue at healthcare. The issues within the healthcare system. It put everything on insurance companies. But again, it's the law of the land, and I think that we need to do something for those people in the gap, if for no other reason than to be fiscally responsible and to move the costs of that away from the hospitals, away from the county property tax payers. And also, there has been an interim committee meeting of the state legislature this summer. And they're working to develop an Idaho plan to try to address that population.
Okay. Thank you, Sean. We have time for just one or two more questions. And let's switch up to another topic here. There's on public lands. We'll start with you, Sean. There's an active movement within Idaho promoting a transfer of federal lands to the state. Do you favor or oppose this effort and why?
You know, I've always said, and I'm on record of saying that I think that the state could do a better job of managing our federal lands when it comes to the multiple use concept and part of that multiple use concept being a sustained timber production. And I think the state does a better job of that for a variety of reasons. And I understand the frustrations and the anger of those, and share actually the frustration with our federal folks and their land management and the gridlock of management that they're in. And but I think there are ways other than spending millions of taxpayer dollars to go to the court system and try to take back those lands. Couple things. If Idaho was to take those lands, two things would have to happen. One, Congress would have to pass act that would make that so. And second, Idaho's constitution would have to be changed because of the way the constitution talks to giving up any right to those lands at statehood. Those are two facts. Those are two actions. They're not impossible actions, but they're actions that have to be taken. In the meantime, we have acres of national forest land that are rotting, that need some help, that we have more dead and dying trees on those lands than we have taken out in logging or are growing. And that's a catastrophe waiting to happen. The state has been working with the Forest Service with a provision under the Farm Bill that was passed in 2014. It's called the Good Neighbor Authority. And just this summer, the state has entered into contracts with the Forest Service. They're prepping timber sales. They're selling timber sales. They're doing recreational work on these Forest Service lands. And so we are moving forward and actually addressing the issues on the land. We're also in a partnership between the state and federal governments. It's putting people to work, and it's making our forests healthy. And there's about 1.5 million acres in Idaho that have been designated at this point in time. And I think if this effort is successful, that we can see an expansion of that. In the meantime, the other work can continue if that's the will of the people and the will of Congress and the will of Idahoans to change their constitution. But we need to have action now on those lands in order to take care of them and avoid the wildfire that will come.
Okay. Thank you, Sean. Steve Tanner, same question to you. Do you support the movement to transfer federal lands to the state?
I do, and the management of the federal lands is basically a token effort. It stopped being happening. Over the years, those who were in the logging industry knew that the hoot owl or the whatever species of animal they were using as an environmental front, that was an excuse to shut down the forest, and they did that. We have power. We talked about clean energy. We have a power plant up in Boundary County that produces, I don't have the kilowatts, but it produces more than the Moyer Dam, which is the city power plant for Bonner's Ferry. And we have streams after streams that we could do that, but through environmentalism, we can't do that. And I know the reason for it. I was going to go back real quickly and quote from history again in 1630. I forget his name now. Sorry. Anyway, John Winthrop. And this is the one that's been quoted by Reagan, by John F. Kennedy. The history that America would be, says, this is part of his discourse that he made in 1630, for we must consider that we shall be as a city upon a hill, the eyes of all people are upon us, so that if we shall deal falsely with God in the work that we undertake and show to cause him to withdraw his present help from us, we shall be made a story and a byword through the generations. And you know, that's what's happening. We were started as a light upon a city upon a hill, and all the nations of the earth came here, and they said, "What in the world's happening?" And it was that freedom, guided by virtue, guided by faith, worked together, and it's been a great blessing. And because of that, leaving that, we have a result from that. And Winthrop ended his discourse with a quote. He says, he ended his quote from a quote from Moses that said, "There is now set before us life and death, good and evil, in that we are commanded this day to love the Lord our God and to love one another, to walk in His ways and to keep His commandments and His ordinances and His laws and His articles of our covenant." And he ends it with, "But should we be seduced and worship other gods, our pleasure and profits, and serve them, it is propounded unto us this day that we should surely perish out of the good land, whether he has passed over this vast sea to possess it. Therefore, let us choose life, that we and our seed may live."
Yeah, thank you, anyway. Steve. We're just about out of time. We really appreciate both of you coming in. And what we'd like to hear now, and we'll start with Steve, is a little bit of a wrap-up and an overview. And what were you going to say, Chris? You're looking at me like you wanted to say something.
Just that, this is just give us a closing statement. You've only got about 90 seconds each, please. So, Steve, go ahead. Give us your pitch on why the voters should go for you.
Well, the likelihood of them going for me is slim and none, but lightning does strike sometimes. But I don't expect it. But I do just want a message that, you know, when will it be bad enough that we can respond to what's happening? How bad does it have to get? You know, the process of declaring the basic foundation of our nation, the family, and declaring that totally at odds with history, with every part of the foundations of our nation and what's good and right. Will it be when, like they've already put out that, well, if you feel like a girl, you can go into the girls' bathroom or locker room? You know, it isn't going to stop there. There will be no end to it. There is no neutrality in life. There is either push one way or the other way. So if we don't recognize that, you will recognize it at some point. And that's the point that I'm asking. When will you say it's enough? And that's all. And if you can consider that, because if you're in law enforcement, if you're in the senator, if you're whatever you are, a private citizen, doesn't matter what position you're in, at what point will you say, I cannot go any farther? And if you wait too long, it'll be like Russia.
Thank you. Sean, your closing statement, please.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Susie, and your listening audience for having us on this morning. And I am asking for the voters' consideration to reelect me to the Idaho State Senate for our area, Legislative District 1. I believe I have a solid track record of accomplishments for our area on the issues that people have identified as important to them in terms of school funding, roads, and things that make our area better. I have the tools, the experience, and asking for your consideration next Tuesday, November 8th. And if all else, if I leave you with nothing else, please vote. It's very, very important. And again, thank you.
And thank you very much, both Steve Tanner and Sean Keogh, running for District 1 Senate seat. I want to remind our listeners that you can listen to this interview as a podcast on krfy.org. We'll also be rebroadcasting this same program on Friday at 5 p.m. And tonight, I'll let you tell us about the forum, Chris.
Yes, tonight there's a candidates forum, so you'll be able to meet both these candidates there and candidates for all the other offices. That's at the Sandpoint High School Auditorium, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. You'll be able to hear that broadcast over KRFY 88.5 FM, as well as you'll be able to see a stream on sandpointonline.com.
And I want to remind our listeners, as Sean said, vote on voting day. That's November 8th. And on November 9th, that's Wednesday next week, we'll be concluding Local Decision 2016. The morning following the election will be devoted to a show to recap the results of the election with the Sandpoint Reader and Bonner County Daily Bee reporters and journalists here at the KRFY studios at 88.5.
Yeah, we'll do the play-by-play actually, it'll be the Monday morning quarterbacking we'll be doing.
This will be interesting. But get out and vote. That's what this is all about, to inform our listeners. We're going to leave you now on this beautiful Wednesday morning with a little tiny bit of Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. We hope you have a beautiful day.
All right. Bye now.